All right, let's go east. Let's go to Knoxville. Let's bring in Vince Ferrara, WNML, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Good, guys. Hope you're doing well. Rested up a little bit post-coaching search, so it went well. Hope you guys had a good one also.
Really cool. You know, for all the pitfalls and negative comments you can make about social media, really cool things can also happen on social media. And the Keaton Jones video, the young man from Knoxville, really cool to see how that thing has gone viral. And, man, he is a celebrity now.
Yeah, people have reached out to him from all facets of life and the world, and it's been incredible. I think some of the Tennessee football players were the first to jump on board and support him. Tyler Burr, Jerry Garantano, and many others. Of course, you guys know about the Titans and what they've done in reaching out to him. And yeah, everyone from the director of Toy Story 3 to you name the artist and singer and Snoop Dogg and many others. So it.
Yeah, I was gonna say at this point you can just say everybody's reached out to him.
I tell you, I think that is a tremendous gesture, and I think Keaton Jones, and I certainly admire what's happened here, and let's hope he's gonna get the reaction and the school react and everybody in the community react. I hope, too, that what comes from this.
Do you think Stars can use something like this? This is probably huge for them,
well,
right?
Stars is a big has a big campaign, and has for a long time. Move to Stand is their anti-bullying campaign that they've had for years. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping this creates awareness for everybody in every middle school, because those middle school years are tough. You know, I think if we all think back, we can think when we were at that age that bullying was out there. And so if this helps call awareness to it and has people rethinking how they react around bullies, standing up to bullies, not just standing by while somebody's getting bullied, I think that's really where Keaton Jones can be a hero. Not just that he's going to start getting treated better and the attention he's getting, but the influence he's going to have on everybody else who sees this and says, you know what, nobody should be treated that way.
Well, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like, you know, another subject that's going on right now in sports and politics. It's a powerful thing, and now women feel empowered to come forward. And so maybe this can, same deal, people that are getting bullied, maybe this will empower them to come forward and say enough is enough. You can't do this to me.
It's okay to speak out. It's okay to tell your story.
Yes.
And let people know. And it's not okay to just stand by and be afraid to let someone know that someone else is in these situations. And people with influence, and we're seeing it more with all protests and different things in sports. Now people that have a platform are using it for other things to try to help society. So I think this is another one where hopefully everyone in those spots that have helped him out can make a difference in those areas.
So, okay, we sit here on this Monday. It's been an interesting ride for the last couple of weeks. What's it been like since the press conference on Friday? Kind of what's been the reaction there in Knoxville?
Overall, pretty positive. I think part of it was the trust in Philip Fulmer and the fact that it looked like now they cleared all the cooks out of the kitchen and the head chef stepped back into the kitchen and said, all right, I got this. I know what you want to eat, and I'm going to make you the best meal possible. And I think that's what Chef Fulmer did. And it looked like it was his search, and he fit a lot of the criteria that Philip Fulmer was looking for. So the trust level in Philip Fulmer, plus people seeing and learning about more about him and his winning background, his ability to recruit, being a relentless competitor, all these things that are very positive that I think have fans pretty excited, especially considering what they've been through to land with a guy that can potentially change their culture, develop players like he has, put together a heavy, heavy SEC staff of guys he has relationships with. I think these are all things that are exciting the fan base right now, and it's turned all the negativity back to fresh start, We got our AD. We got a coach that knows how to win. Let's recruit and let's roll. And I think Tennessee needed that considering how the season and the weeks afterwards went.
What did you think about Jimmy Haslam's comments over the weekend? I mean, that was bizarre, to say the least. I mean, driving home the point, I had nothing to do with this hire. What can we read into that?
Well, I posed that to when I was on our afternoon show with Jimmy Himes, and he said that his involvement was they asked him about the Schiano deal, and he approved of it, as did Peyton Manning. But nothing, I mean, is he saying nothing in terms of the vetting of candidates and things like that? I guess that would be okay. But when you say nothing, it's interpreted as absolutely nothing, no conversations, no nothing, literally nothing. That's the way it's interpreted. And if he meant it otherwise, then he misspoke, because there's no way that he had literally nothing to do with that process. So it just, maybe he meant something else and he said nothing, but that can't possibly be true.
Was he trying to distance himself from Jeremy Pruitt and say, hey, I didn't approve of this? Or
no.
Is he trying to tell us that he's kind of getting pushed to the back burner?
No, he wasn't involved in the second half of the search after Curry. When Philip Fulmer was put in as AD, it was, hey, we're going to do this in-house with Philip Fulmer that's here, that's going to run the show. And there wasn't going to be a pulling back and forth from Jimmy Haslam. And I don't even know how much Peyton Manning really was involved in it. They may have reached out to him and just to ask him his opinion also. But I think this was a search now run by Philip Fulmer and not by a bunch of people chiming in like it was before with Curry. So I think the setup was already there, and therefore I don't think he was involved in this part of it.
If anything, Vince, this is going to solidify what I've been saying for a good while about UT. Too many cooks in the kitchen, weak leadership. You cannot win. You cannot be successful with those elements in play. And to me, I feel like Philip Fulmer is about to stabilize all of that and fix a lot of those problems, because it seems like he is in control.
He is, from that standpoint, absolutely. When you have too much involvement from outside your university, I don't think it's ever a good idea. And there's plenty of other donors that probably feel like, hey, why did his voice get heard and not mine? I'm going to pull my money back. Now you have one in the family that's in that position that can bring the fans together, can bring a lot of the donors together, not for a voice, but now for the right reasons to help the university out. And I think because you could get a seat at the table before, I think the financial backing was for a voice, as opposed to I want to help out my university best I can. Now that they know that it's Philip Fulmer is going to make those decisions with the blessing of the president and chancellor, I think it's a much better system. It's a cleaner system. And here's another thing: within the athletic department, there's been a whole lot of dissension through the years, going back to Mike Hamilton, Dave Hart. And I think Philip Fulmer, who has Tennessee's best intentions in mind, I think he can try to bring more of a family atmosphere within the athletic department and do things better. There's a lot of positives to it. And then obviously the fan trust in him they have as well. That calmed the waters big time in the search, and they were more accepting of Jeremy Pruitt. I'm not saying Philip Fulmer isn't going to make mistakes. He likely will. But I think there's a different level of trust moving forward, and the whole system is a lot cleaner with this restart with him in that AD spot.
I've heard a lot of names being tossed out there. Heck, I put one out there last week. It seemed like they're all true, but I mean, it's critical what his staff looks like. How do you think his staff is going to be comprised on both sides of the ball?
Based on knowing that their guys are out recruiting, we know some of their staff already.
Yeah.
Because they're representing Tennessee in going out and visiting prospects, and they're doing a lot of work. So we know that Will Friend, who's been at Colorado State, he's coming on board. Tyson Helton was the quarterback's coach at USC. So they get a USC coach, but it's not T. Martin.
Isn't that amazing? And the one is the head coach's brother, younger brother.
Right.
Which is strange.
And Tyson Helton actually worked under Jeff Brohm at Western Kentucky. So Brohm, who was almost Tennessee's coach, now the guy that worked with him is on the staff. Terry Fair, who is a former Vol, he's been Colorado State's defensive backs coach, a rising young coach. That's the UT representation. They also are holding over Robert Gillespie. He'll coach the running backs, and I think there's a good chance he could get a recruiting coordinator title as he has had before. He was by far the most deserving of any of the Butch Jones coaches to remain on staff. Kevin Shear coming over from Georgia. He will likely do what Jeremy Pruitt's doing, and that's being with his team through the playoffs and then come back after the dead period, after their season is over. Chris Rump, who's been at a bunch of SEC schools, big-time defensive line coach, develops players and can recruit. And then Tracy Rocker, who you guys know really well, bit with the Titans, a number of SEC schools, a really good defensive line coach. Those are the ones we know about. There's also been some talk of Chris Wenke, who has been on Alabama's off-field staff, great developer of quarterbacks. I think that would be a huge get if you can add Chris Wenke. Brian Niedermeyer, off-the-field staffer as well. Still a couple more spots to fill. And remember, they're going to expand the on-field coaching staff to 10 in January. So they'll be probably two-part in announcing their coaching staff. But those are the names we know about that are already working recruiting for Tennessee.
Chris Wenke, by the way, not only a former Heisman Trophy winner, a former Knoxville Blue Jay at the AA level back in the day. And, of course, I was in the minor leagues.
Well, he's 50
in the Blue
now,
Jays.
So he's been around for a while.
He's not 50.
He's not?
He's not 50. He's getting close. He's getting close.
I don't know if that's
a little-known fact, Vince, that you could, if you look up, he was a very good prospect, first baseman, in the Blue Jays chain, and he got as high as AA, and it was right around that time that he just looked up and he saw the pathway sort of blocked, and then he turned his attention to football at that point. As we know, he's 28 years old when he won the Heisman.
Mm-hmm. Is Pruitt like going to run is Pruitt going to run the defense?
Well, that's a good question. I think a first-time head coach in his position is going to have so much new. I think that might be tough, especially because whoever he names as defensive coordinator would not have called plays before on defense. Also, whoever their offensive coordinator will be, if it is indeed Tyson Helton, he hasn't solely called plays before either. So now you have a first-time head coach, first-time play callers on both sides of the ball. Now, they haven't officially told us those roles, but Jeremy Pruitt's going to have so much more to deal with. He might start out in that role, but I think it would be very, very tough for him to do. And there's also a co-defensive coordinator possibility too. So he will have his hands all over that defense, there's no doubt. But in terms of calling the defense down in, down out, that would be very difficult for him to do. I just don't know right now, but I think that would be tough.
Shea Patterson has made it official. Mm-hmm. The former Ole Miss quarterback will transfer to Michigan. He will be join Jim Harbaugh as the new Wolverines quarterback. And it looks like Memphis offensive coordinator, according to some reports I've seen on Twitter, Memphis offensive coordinator Daryl Dickey will be Jimbo Fisher's OC at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. So those are some things coming down the pike. All right, we'll come back more with Vince Ferrara, WNML. In Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. We'll talk more Vols with him next on 3D. Philip Fulmer taking to the hardwood over the weekend, trotting out Jeremy Pruitt at the basketball game. Vols taking on Lipscomb. Back here on 3D, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick alongside Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville. And, yeah, by the way, speaking of, I don't know if you're going there, so I don't want to – basketball. I know there's been a lot of stuff with football, but basketball's off to a really, really good start. They look pretty darn good. Way better than the media picking them 13 out of 14 in the SEC.
Well, it also tells you the league is better. The league is deeper than it has been in years. You agree, Vince?
I do. Although the SEC had three teams in the top 10, and Florida and Texas A&M have taken some bad losses as of late. Florida's dipped all the way down to 22. A&M dropped to ninth. So, yeah, both of those programs kind of brought the SEC's image within the non-conference down a little bit. Still four ranked teams. Tennessee is the third highest ranked SEC team right now, even higher than Florida after their phenomenal start. The 13th thing is something that the players talk about all the time, the media, the fans talk about all the time, and it's just something that's going to be a chip on their shoulder all year. But that was really not paying attention if you had them 13th in the league. I thought that was silly. I thought they'd be middle of the pack. They're even better than I thought they would. They're deep. They have better post play than they did a year ago. They're better defensively, better offensively. They were leading the SEC in assists going into Saturday's win over Lipscomb. And they had 22 assists in that game as well. So that'll probably only go up. And they're winning games even when they're not playing their best. And those are things that they weren't able to do last year. They would lose games where they didn't play well. That just shows you the improvement they've made.
Vince, I agree with you. I think everything you said is right on, and I think they were kind of underrated coming into the season. I also thought, just on a local note here, I watched a lot of the game against Lipscomb. Lipscomb's a pretty good team. They've already beaten Belmont twice. Belmont has beaten both Vanderbilt and Middle Tennessee. Middle Tennessee thrashed Ole Miss over the weekend. I think that bodes well for Tennessee. That win is probably better than it might appear to some in Knoxville who are more the casual fans.
There's no doubt, and they did a good job for a good part of the game on their leading scorer in Garrison Matthews, one of the top scorers in the country. And Rick Barnes complimented them afterwards and said they were really tough. They can shoot, play smart basketball. And Tennessee has defensive answers. They did. They changed guys that would defend Matthews, their top scorer, and I think that's a sign of what they can do moving forward. I don't know, Willie, where does Lipscomb in the, if you rank basketball teams, college basketball teams in on the FBS level in the state of Tennessee, where would Lipscomb fall on that list?
It's pretty intriguing because of who's beating who. A lot of them play each other, which is something we're really excited about. We've mentioned that a bunch on the show, that a lot of the teams in this area are not afraid to play each other, even go to the other team's gym. But I think Lipscomb's two wins over Belmont are pretty impressive. And I think Lipscomb has a legit shot to win their conference and go to the NCAA tournament for the first time. I think they had a decent shot last year. They got a lot of guys back. I think they are right there.
Well, I don't think it's an accident that Rick Barnes finds these types of teams to challenge himself with and challenge the team in preseason. Even the teams that don't have maybe the big national names and the brands, and obviously they've got some of those teams too, but he likes to play teams that are contenders in their conference, in whatever conference they're playing, and not afraid to play the regional teams too. He wants to play any and everybody. And even if you look back, the resume is only getting better, because when you look back at the tournament in the Bahamas, Villanova's moved up to number one. So now Tennessee's lone loss on the year is to the current number one team in the country. And guess what? They got the number seven team in the country coming up on Sunday in what will be a Checker Thompson Bowling Arena game. And those have been few and far between that they've pulled those off. But they're going to do it again. It's sold out. Just a huge opportunity for this program to be able to notch a win against an elite program like North Carolina at their place.
It's a good point. I think the league as a whole has done a much better job of scheduling. They've come light years, and that's helping the league a lot. Vince, let's talk recruiting here for a moment. What's the latest on how the coaching change and, you know, everybody that's been trying to stay out there and keep guys in the fold? Where does it sit right now?
Well, overall, very positive. And there were big-time prospects that were tweeting out Thursday night, not that long after Jeremy Pruitt's introductory press conference, that they were excited to get an offer from Tennessee. One of the top receivers in the country that looked like he was headed to Alabama, and Jacob Copeland, he is one of them that's in the mix. They've got there's a running back, Brandon Cahill from Nevada, who is actually a linebacker that plays running back. He's a BYU commit, a four-star. So just a number of those guys that are Tennessee really wasn't in the mix for, that quickly Jeremy Pruitt has gotten back into the fold. And maybe the second most important one is Alante Taylor, who is one of a long list of decommits from this class. He's a talented wide receiver in-state and from Coffee County, and he canceled his visit scheduled for next weekend at Louisville to return to Tennessee after visiting Tennessee this weekend. That's significant. Now, they weren't able to do that with Cade Mays. Cade Mays is a five-star offensive lineman from Knoxville Catholic. He is still scheduled to go to Georgia this coming weekend, which will be the final weekend prior to the early signing period, December 20th through the 22nd. Now, kids aren't mandated to sign at that time, but there are plenty that would like to get it done and out of the way. So many are viewing these visit weekends as the final opportunity to make a difference, because you don't know if a kid is going to decide to sign or be influenced by another school. So Tennessee is trying to cash in on these last two weekends. They had six kids, including Taylor, in this weekend. One of them that came to visit, Brandon Cross, a defensive back from Orlando, a three-star, he actually decommitted from Tennessee this morning. When you read his tweet and what was in it, he thanked everyone but Jeremy Pruitt and the current staff. He just says it didn't work out the way he thought it would, the visit, which tells me that the coaching staff maybe encouraged him to go another direction if they didn't evaluate him the same way. They're going after some big-time players. So that stuff is going to happen. It sucks for these kids this late in the process, but this early signing period is pushing the envelope on these situations. These kids feel like they're late in the process. They're forced to have to change course, and they don't have to sign right now, but a lot of them want to. So this is a whole new deal in working with this early signing period. Overall, though, they're getting in the mix for a lot more big-time prospects, and I think you will see a big jump in Tennessee's rankings, maybe not right away, but by the time you get to National Signing Day.
What about this number one JUCO tight end in the country? I guess the kid at Arizona Western. Where's Tennessee? He's put out there on Twitter that he's been offered by them, but a lot of people still feel Alabama is the favorite. Where are they on him? Do you know anything about him?
Not specifically. I know that he was excited to have Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt's staff in the mix for him and interested in him, but nothing in terms of insight with him specifically. I know there's a number of guys like an Auburn commit and Cornus Miller. I mentioned the BYU commit. Britton Cox is another guy to look for. He was a guy that's committed to Ohio State. He's from Georgia. This just shows an example of Jeremy Pruitt getting in the mix. He was committed to Ohio State until recently, and then he decommitted. His top recruiter at Alabama was Jeremy Pruitt. His top recruiter at Georgia was Kevin Shearer, both of them now on the Tennessee staff. So now they're working on trying to get in on another defensive lineman like Britton Cox. So they need tight ends for sure. They need everything right now, but no specifics on him exactly.
Vince, let's leave on this one. There's an article, and I'm sure you've seen it. It was in the Knoxville News Sentinel. Rachel Ohm, cost of UT coach search in flux, but likely millions. And they go through person by person what's out there, the buyout of Butch Jones's staff, the John Curry contract situation, and the speculation of what will happen with Greg Schiano in the aftermath of everything. who's working on that behind the scenes? What have you guys been able to uncover on what the likely price tag will be?
Well, the latest development on at least the Greg Schiano part of it was that Jimmy Himes from our station got the contract bylaws for UT are. And according to that, the memorandum of understanding must be signed by UT's president or their chief financial officer, which is a different twist than many were thinking. And there were only the signatures of John Curry and Greg Schiano on that MOU. Therefore, if that is in fact accurate, then according to the UT bylaws, that would be invalid. Now, that doesn't mean that the Schiano camp isn't still going to try to go through this and try to get some money, maybe settle and cash in on this. So those are hard to really determine where you're going to end up paying or how much you're going to end up paying from that standpoint. There's also the John Curry standpoint. They're trying to pursue firing for cause. Where is that in their investigation and how much they have on their side to be able to do that? Plus, they could very well be messy. Curry was passed over for another AD job because of that pending situation with Tennessee. So that's another indication that they know that this could be an ugly ongoing thing if schools won't touch John Curry as an AD, even though many say he still has a good reputation. And then there's the contracts of coaches that end up getting other jobs. Bob Shoup at Mississippi State is one example. You would expect a couple of others to get other jobs. How much do you bring down the dollars on what they owe from the previous coaching staff? So it's a moving target, but that's the work to this point in the total dollars that are going to cost them. It's going to be expensive, no doubt, but where that target ends up landing still will for sure fluctuate.
Big win for the Lady Vols, beating number two Texas.
Yeah, I was there, and they're legit. This is Holly Warlick's best team, and their freshmen all contribute. They're all just big-time, hardcore competitors. They play hard. Not only are they competitive, but overall they're very smart. Vina Westbrook is an elite passer. Jamie Nard is playing like a first team All-American, not all SEC All-American. She's that good, no holes in her game. They're the best team that I've seen being in Tennessee since 2010, and it starts with the different mindset of the freshmen, and then having experienced players like Nard and Russell. They're undefeated. They moved up to number 7 in the polls after beating number 2 Texas, and that might be the only, on the women's side, that might be the only SEC top 10 win to this point. And at least it was going into last week. The SEC hadn't beaten another top 10 team around the country, so it's either one or two, and Tennessee's got that. A really good team for Holly Warlick, and they'll have some other top 25 opponents coming up in their schedule the next few weeks.
Did I just hear you say if they don't get to the Final Four, it would be a bust? That would be a huge disappointment. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, the unofficial bar of expectation via Vince Ferrara. Yeah, I think that's what I ended up doing. And now I think it's Elite Eight, Final Four. Still haven't seen a number of the top programs around the country to compare them to. But yeah, the bar is going to continue to rise, and how much does that impact this team? I don't know that it'll impact the freshmen. How it impacts Holly Warlick, that's maybe a different question. We will get the answer.
Good stuff as always. Hey, have a great week.
You guys do the same. Appreciate it.
Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Always appreciate him joining us at noon every Monday. He has great information. Back to wrap up the third hour of 3D next.